I'm Carlos Virgen, and this is The Storyline, produced by The Day in New London, Connecticut. Hi, Taylor. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. How's the home office doing?
It's going. It's getting a little bit monotonous, but I feel like I have spikes in productivity and then some days where it seems like I'm stuck in the same routine. But overall, you know, working long days, working on a lot of different stories, yeah. Focusing on how different communities are affected, doing a lot of yoga, going on a lot of runs.
Yeah, similar here. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. trying to stay busy, and especially the release of doing some physical activity is always good.
Yeah. Absolutely, it's saving my life during this.
So I wanted to talk to you today about a story that you're working on about how the current crisis, the pandemic, is affecting crime statistics in our region, and also how the new normal, if you want to call it, is affecting how the local police departments do their job in the future. Who did you reach out to talk about some of these early emerging trends or data points that we're seeing in the last few weeks?
So late last week, I caught up with John DiCarlo, who is a associate professor and director of the master's program in criminal justice at the University of New Haven. He's also a retired police chief and has a PhD in criminology. And we spoke extensively about how crime trends are tracked and what data is available and how it compares to what data we'll be able to look at in a year from now, right, to analyze how this pandemic has affected crimes. And we also talked about police strategy, how police departments are changing the way they work and how those changes might be permanent, how departments might not go back to the way things were before this. And we talked about changes that we're seeing in the types of crime that are occurring and why that might be.
I know he mentioned in your interview that, you know, it's still too early to actually identify trends. So talk a little bit about the difference between longitudinal data and cross-sectional data that he talked to you about.
He said that data that we have right now that looks at a month worth of crime statistics is kind of like a snapshot. It's a still photo of what we're seeing right now, whereas the longitudinal data that we'll be able to look at a year from now to compare what happened between March and April and between April 2020 and April 2019 is kind of more like a film. It gives us a bigger picture, a more in-depth sense of what's going on comparatively to what's happened in the past, which will give us a better opportunity to figure out what social changes might have led to those differences in crime rates.
We have two ways of measuring crime data. The first is called cross-sectional. And so we look at a data for a month and see what happened. And a cross-sectional data is more like a snapshot using a still camera, whereas longitudinal data, the other kind of data that we look at, measures trends over a year or even longer. So basically, cross-sectional data, or those short looks at data that we only have now, aren't the most accurate, unfortunately. And when to really look at what happened and be able to analyze the crime trend in related to variables like social structure, like things that we're seeing in the pandemic, take longer, and those would require a longitudinal look at the data. And what we're really waiting for is that data, and that won't, of course, be in for a while.
So what we're looking at right now, the data that we have currently of over the last, you know, couple of months, 8 weeks or what have you, since the pandemic kind of really blew up in the state, and since the governor issued his executive orders for stay at home, is really more anecdotal data. Can you talk a little bit about some of that?
Juvenile crime appears to be up, which DiCarlo had some interesting insight into that, talking about how juveniles are potentially committing more crimes just because they've experienced such a social change.
The police chiefs in Connecticut are actually telling us a few things, and they're saying that juvenile crime appears to be up. And of course, why would that be necessarily? Well, kids are out of school, so that's a big social change, and they maybe have more time on their hands. There's less accountability in what they're doing. There may be less oversight in what is happening. So that could be theoretically a reason why the police chiefs are reporting that juvenile crime is up.
There's definitely a spike in domestic violence. We're seeing that here in southeastern Connecticut in almost every town. As a breaking news reporter, I am responsible for collecting the arrest logs every week. And typically we see a lot of car thefts and violent crimes and fights and just a variety of different arrests, larceny, burglary, mischief. And from what I'm seeing, every arrest log that comes in is almost 100% domestic violence. Here, right in New London, we had a case a few weeks ago where a woman was violently stabbed by a partner who is facing charges of attempted murder. On April 15th, one of our reporters, Karen Florin, did a piece on the rise of domestic violence here in southeastern Connecticut. She spoke with the chief executive officer of Safe Futures, which is a nonprofit, a local nonprofit that offers a hotline and in-person support for people suffering from domestic violence. And the executive officer reported that those domestic violence hotlines have increased by 20% since the start of the pandemic. In her reporting, Florin also found that calls to the statewide Safe Connect hotline increased by 7% between February and March, as reported by the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence on April 9th. And we can only expect from what we're seeing in locally in our towns here that those numbers are going to climb even further for April. Nationally, Florin found domestic violence incidents are up by 37%, according to that executive officer from Safe Futures. So here in the state, we are definitely seeing a spike. On April 6th, the New York Times published a relatively lengthy story about the rise of domestic violence nationwide. And in their report, they said that domestic violence is spreading like a virus itself. The experts that they interviewed said that domestic violence tends to go up anytime family members are kept in close quarters or spending more time together.
What did Professor DiCarlo have to say about the potential increase in domestic incidents, domestic violence case calls?
So what DiCarlo said was that the reason that domestic violence is probably on the rise is just due to the fact that people are spending more time together.
There are also, anecdotally, more domestic violence incidents, and that runs the gamut, of course, from a simple domestic violence argument all the way to an assault of some type or a threatening, and they seem to be up. And of course, when we think about that, people are in the house together right now, more so than they have been in the recent past. And, you know, we don't normally spend this much time together.
One of the things that, as we're looking at these anecdotal situations and waiting for the longitudinal data, one of the things that DiCarlo mentioned that has been helping him understand what's happening in criminology right now is a study that took place in 1979 at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. It's called the routine activity theory.
There's one criminological theory in particular that predicted what will happen during social change. And obviously, what's more representative of social change in the last 100 years than the pandemic? We're all at home. We're not able to get out. There is no social interchange. So those are just some examples of what this theory was addressing. And the theory that I'm talking about, of course, was called social change and crime rates, a routine activity theory. And it was written by Lawrence Cohen and Marcus Felsen in 1979. And they were both at, I think, Urbana, University of Illinois at Urbana at the time. And the theory predicted that large changes in social interaction would result in differences in crime trends. And so this is a good experiment to see whether that the tenets of that theory are kind of really holding true.
And that theory says that there are three things that need to be in place for a crime to occur. There needs to be a lack of capable guardianship. There needs to be a target of opportunity, and there needs to be a motivated offender. So what that breaks down to essentially is that there needs to be an opportunity for someone to commit a crime without an authority figure, whether it be a parent, a teacher, a police officer, a manager at a bar, looking at them, witnessing it. There needs to be a target of opportunity. There needs to be something for them to target their crime toward, whether it be the vehicle that's left unlocked that they're breaking into, the spouse that they are becoming violent with after an argument. And there needs to be a motivated offender. So there needs to be the person who's committing the crime needs to have motivation, whether it is a argument at a bar that they're getting into with someone, whether it's they're walking by a house and it's left unlocked and they have the motivation of feeling that they need money, that they need to steal a product, that they need to seek revenge on someone who spilled a drink on them at a bar. There needs to be some level of motivation.
Transitioning from that to how these huge disruptions in our daily lives, what does this mean for policing, community policing? What is the future outlook for policing in Connecticut and around the country?
As police departments shift to doing more of their community policing efforts over the phone, through online submissions, and through social media outreach, that might be a change that stays when we return to whatever our next version of normal is. Police departments might learn that it's easier to not respond in person to every complaint, that it's not even that it's easier, but it's more effective. It takes off less time for the officers. It is more of a cohesive process for individuals who are filing complaints and want to follow up on them regularly rather than requesting police presence to follow up on those issues over and over and over. So we might not necessarily see a return to the exact way that police departments were functioning before this. But at the same time, we might. This might be a completely temporary change. We might see in a few months that police departments don't take advantage of the technological innovations that they've been using toward this, and they just immediately revert to how they were functioning before. That's something that we're going to have to wait and see. And it's something that's probably going to be at the discretion of every individual department, but it will be interesting to see either way what happens when this is all over.
Right. So really, we'll learn more in the coming months and through the rest of the year to really see the impact of what this crisis has done, not only to our economy, but also to our communities and the way that the police respond to our communities.
Absolutely. I think looking back a year from now, the data is going to show some drastic changes in crime rates and crime trends, whether it be the number of crimes being committed or the types of crimes being committed. I think we're going to see a drastic change in domestic violence. And we're probably going to see a lot of different resources pop up to help people that are struggling with domestic violence in a unique situation. And we're going to see a change in policing strategies. Whether those changes are long-term or temporary is yet to be seen, but there's definitely a stark change that's taking place now, and there's going to have to be either a return to normal or a shift to a new normal when this is all over.
To sum things up, we are living experiment right now as far as criminal justice goes. The situation is exigent. We are reacting to things based on what happens in the criminal justice system. We are struggling for answers, and we are still the police departments that I have talked to are struggling to continue to provide good community service to the places where they work. I think that after it all shakes out, we will find out a lot of things about ourselves that we maybe didn't know. I think that we will maybe look at some of the theoretical, the criminologically theoretical models for why people commit crime and understand what happened in this time of the pandemic by applying some of those models and looking at them and finding what social factors and medical factors and policing factors and so many other things affected what we are doing. So again, a living experiment. I don't recall in my career in policing or research afterward anything like this ever happening. And I think that everyone that I have talked to has said basically the same thing. This is all new and we're learning as we go. And our capability and our ability to adapt and innovate as a species is perhaps now more important than it ever has been.
What questions or concerns do you have about the pandemic? Submit your question at theday.com/coronavirus question.